Today is Monday, November 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. It's the final day before the official U.S. presidential election, and the candidates haven't stopped campaigning.
If Biden wins, China wins. When we win, America wins.
And this is the most important election of our lifetime.
Plus, racial discrimination during the pandemic.
It's been pretty awful at a number of levels. I mean, I think Asian Australians, in particular Chinese Australians, have really been crunched.
And protests continue in Belarus. We'll have these stories and more next. The 2020 U.S. general election officially takes place tomorrow, Tuesday, November 3rd. This past weekend saw a flurry of activity from both U.S. President Donald Trump, former Vice President Joe Biden, and their respective campaigns.
If Biden wins, China wins. When we win, America wins. In 2016, Michigan voted to fire this corrupt political establishment, and you elected an outsider as your president who is finally putting America first.
We have to earn our democracy. We have to get out and vote. As my late friend John Lewis reminded us, freedom is not a state. Freedom is an act. We have to defend it. We have to vote. And this is the most important election of our lifetimes.
The AP Sagar Magani has this update on what the candidates are up to today.
It's another five-rally day for President Trump, including an event in Joe Biden's hometown of Scranton, Pennsylvania. With Pennsylvania emerging as perhaps the key battleground, Biden will be there three times, ending the campaign where he started it last year, in Pittsburgh, with an appeal to working-class voters who helped seal a Trump win in 2016. Elections officials are getting ready to count the votes of some 93 million Americans who've already cast ballots. Millions more will go to the polls tomorrow. The president's blasting states who will count ballots sent in after then, and says as soon as the polls close in battlegrounds like Pennsylvania.
We're going in with our lawyers.
It's unclear, though, just what he meant. There's an appeal pending at the Supreme Court over counting absentee ballots in Pennsylvania received up to 3 days after the election, an issue that could be hugely important if those ballots could tip the outcome. Polls show a close race in Ohio, which Donald Trump won by 8 points in 2016. No Republican has gone to the White House without Ohio, and Biden's looking to flip it. He'll visit Cleveland, the biggest city in heavily Democratic Cuyahoga County, where he needs a significant turnout to win the state. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The world is watching the U.S. election, so we asked people around the world for their thoughts.
My name is Amy Jordan. I'm a teacher from London.
Everything that happens in America does tend to impact the UK. Personally, for me, I don't think it will affect me, but it will definitely affect the UK as a whole and how we feel about things. Another example is with Brexit coming up. We don't know who we're going to have a trade deal with. So, yeah, it does have an impact on us, but I just don't really know how yet.
You'll hear more responses throughout our programming. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden leads nationally in the polls, but only by a razor-thin margin in some states. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekuswar has the latest on both campaigns and the millions of votes already cast.
More than 82 million Americans cast their ballots by Friday, in person, by mail or Dropbox, even from their vehicle.
Everybody keeps saying, go and just vote early. So it's just like, let's just make sure we get it done today.
Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has sought to frame the election as a referendum of President Donald Trump's pandemic response.
I'm not running on the false promise of being able to end this pandemic by flipping a switch. But what I can promise you is this. We will start on day one doing the right thing.
Trump, meanwhile, is campaigning in part on the promise of prosperity, highlighting recent economic data.
You see the number today? 33.1 GDP, the biggest in the history of our country by almost triple, right? Almost triple.
Which brings the GDP to 3.5% below pre-pandemic levels. As protests over police violence continue to rock the United States, Biden blames the president for stoking racial divisions. Trump says he alone can return law and order, accusing his opponent of standing with anarchists and of having a socialist agenda that he says will ruin the U.S.
The Biden closing argument is exactly what his opening argument was, that it's time to unite the country and give it a fresh start. The Trump campaign's closing argument appears to be that Joe Biden and the Democrats will destroy your life. That's a tougher sell.
Former Vice President Biden on Friday maintained a 7% lead in national polls, but U.S. elections are not determined by the popular vote, and instead by electoral votes from each state based on its population. It's a winner-takes-all system in all 50 states except Maine and Nebraska. A candidate needs 270 out of 538 electoral votes to win. Trump is hoping to repeat his 2016 victory by securing electoral college votes in critical battleground states where polls show Biden is ahead by only a slim margin.
Trump is not losing as badly in some of these swing states in the Midwest as he is nationally. But it's just a question about whether the national mood is going to be far enough apart between those vital swing states in the Midwest to really make the difference.
And which states are must-wins for Trump to stay in the White House?
Pennsylvania is going to be the key state to watch on election night. Other states to watch would include Florida. If the president kind of does not look very strong there or even loses in Florida, then it's very hard to see a clear path to victory for him.
Patsy Wida Kuswara, VOA News.
My name is Mutunga Motiso. I am a Kenyan. The U.S. elections are very important to Kenya because Kenya and the U.S. have been friendly nations for a long time. We know that the U.S. supports development activities in this country. We would want to see a peaceful election there and a leader who has the interest of Kenya elected.
Ahead of tomorrow's election, VOA's Jason Patinkin is on the streets of Washington.
Hi, Steve. I'm standing near Black Lives Matter Plaza in the heart of Washington, D.C., near the White House, where businesses and government office buildings are boarding up their windows in case of unrest after tomorrow's election. This area was at the epicenter of racial justice protests this summer, and people aren't taking chances this time. One restaurant employee told me they'll stay open and hope for the best, but they've put plywood over their windows just in case. Back to you, Steve.
Advocates for both major parties are making a final push for their candidate and their policy agenda. While some states usually favor the Republican presidential nominee and others typically favor the Democrat, several important states could go either way. Texas is one of those so-called swing states. To find out what Texas voters care about in this election, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with the state chairman of both parties.
Differences between Republicans and Democrats run deep in Texas. Texas Democratic Party Chairman Gilberto Hinojosa says access to health care is what matters most to his party members, many of whom make too much money to qualify for federally subsidized health insurance, but too little to pay for health insurance at free market rates.
There are more uninsured people in the state of Texas than any other state in the country per capita and total. And a large percentage of those are Latinos and African Americans. This COVID crisis hit us especially hard in Texas because there's so few people that had access to health care, and so many have died. And also, they are the essential workers. When the economy shut down, they're the workers that were exposed, and they're the workers that brought it home.
Hinojosa adds that education is another top priority for Texas Democrats, especially university education.
We have some of the highest tuition rates in the country, and most working people don't have the disposable income to be able to send their kids to college, and so they don't go or they go into serious debt.
Alan West, the chairman of the Texas Republican Party, says members of his party have a very different priority, social unrest and crime.
The overarching theme that I have presented to the voters here in Texas is that this election is about the rule of law and order versus the rule of the mob, the chaos and the violence that we see being played out. And I think it's about their safety and security. No one wants to see their lives or their livelihoods being threatened, especially when folks are talking about defunding police and things of that nature.
West in particular noted the looting and violence seen at some of the anti-racism demonstrations held across the U.S. since May. Texas shares a 3,000-kilometer border with Mexico. And like President Donald Trump, West and many other Republicans take a hard stand against illegal immigrants.
America is a sovereign nation. Texas is a sovereign state, and we should have our border secured, and people should respect our sovereignty, and that's part of the rule of law, not the rule of the mob.
West and many GOP voters also reject what is known as the DACA program, put in place by President Barack Obama. It allows people brought to the U.S. illegally as children to defer deportation and receive some public benefits. In contrast, Democratic State Party Chairman Hinojosa says his voters strongly support a path to citizenship for those covered by the DACA program. They also want protections for many of the undocumented residents who have been in the U.S. for years.
Because these are working people. They're not on welfare. They're not taking anybody's job. They're basically here because they couldn't be where they were at in their home country. And so this is an issue that in big urban areas that's getting people to go out and vote. I mean, they saw what Trump did, caging children, separating families. And it's just a big difference between what they stand for and what we stand for.
Other differences between the two parties relate to climate change. Alan West says that many Texas Republicans do not see climate change as a major problem and say that any attempt to curtail oil and gas production and consumption to mitigate it would devastate the state's economy. Gilberto Hinojosa says most Democrats are concerned about climate change and environmental issues and that addressing them would help the economy. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And still to come...
The Universal Periodic Review, or UPR, is a unique process in that the human rights records of all 193 UN member states, regardless of how weak or powerful they are, come under scrutiny.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to scientists, most stars in the known universe are the smaller and cooler red dwarfs. A number of exoplanets residing in a red dwarf's habitable zone have been discovered, suggesting that life may be able to survive on these planets. A study published in the Astronomical Journal suggests planets circling in a red dwarf's so-called Goldilocks zone may not be as hospitable to life as thought. The study authors used NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and the Hubble Space Telescope to examine a red dwarf known as Barnard Star. Through these space telescope observations, study authors found that this 10-billion-year-old star, only 6 light-years away from us, pumps out lethal blasts of ultraviolet and X-ray radiation 25% of the time. The study suggests these solar flares could damage or destroy any atmospheres the planets may have. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. According to the tracker at Johns Hopkins University in the United States, there are more than 46.5 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 globally. In addition, there have been over 1.2 million deaths attributed to the novel coronavirus, with 31.1 million recoveries. The United States leads the world in the number of cases with more than 9.2 million, while India leads with the most recoveries. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley cut Europe's fourth-quarter economic forecast as a surge in COVID-19 cases prompted the introduction of partial nationwide lockdowns in some countries, halting the nascent recovery seen during the summer. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson ordered his country back into national lockdown from Thursday as a second wave of infections threatened to overwhelm its healthcare service. The move brought Britain into alignment with France and Germany, which imposed nationwide restrictions early last week. An Australian survey of more than 3,000 people found that more than 80% of Asian Australians have reported racial discrimination during the COVID-19 pandemic. Phil Mercer reports that the research is published as Australia marks the 45th anniversary of its Racial Discrimination Act.
The Australian National University study has revealed that 84.5% of Asian Australians reported at least one case of discrimination between January and October this year during the coronavirus pandemic. Many have experienced xenophobia and racism, including physical assaults and verbal threats. The university survey has also shown that Asian Australians were more likely to have jobs and careers adversely affected by coronavirus lockdowns, and they were more anxious about the pandemic than the broader community. Researchers believe a spike in racial attacks and abuse is being driven by the fact that the coronavirus was first detected in China and by mounting political tensions between Beijing and Canberra. Jason Yat-Sen Lee is the president of the Chinese Australia Forum, a non-partisan organisation.
It's been pretty awful at a number of levels. I mean, I think Asian Australians, in particular Chinese Australians, have really been crunched by all the stuff that's been going on, the rising anti-CCP rhetoric, this whole narrative that this is a China virus, this was something that China brought to the world and it's China's fault. There's always a little bit of underlying sort of racism and prejudice anyway. And so these three things come together in a perfect storm.
The university research is published as Australia commemorates the 45th anniversary of its Racial Discrimination Act. The act made it illegal to treat someone unfairly because of their race. Events to mark the introduction of the law in 1975 have focused on racist attacks on Asian groups in Australia during the pandemic. After the United Kingdom, China is the country of origin for the second largest migrant community in Australia, making up about 2.5% of the total population. China has repeatedly accused Australia of being racist and in July warned its citizens not to travel here. Australia's call earlier this year for a global inquiry into the origins of COVID-19 infuriated China, but geopolitical tensions have been festering long before that flashpoint. Analysts have said Australia has been firm but measured in its response, but must tread carefully because China is its biggest trading partner. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Gunmen attack Kabul University's campus Monday, killing at least 19 students and trading fire with security forces. No group immediately took responsibility for the attack, though the Taliban denied being involved. The United States is among 14 countries whose human rights records will be examined under the United Nations Human Rights Council's Universal Periodic Review. The two-week session, which opens Monday, will be held both in person and remotely because of the coronavirus pandemic. Lisa Schlein has more.
The Universal Periodic Review, or UPR, is a unique process in that the human rights records of all 193 UN member states, regardless of how weak or powerful they are, come under scrutiny. All states have participated at least twice since the process began in 2008. They now are in the midst of having their records reviewed for a third time. One of the successes of the UPR is that it has a 100% participation rate. Human Rights Council spokesman Rolando Gomez says the UPR is an opportunity for states to highlight advances they have made in the area of human rights. He agrees some countries may be particularly notorious human rights violators, but adds none has a stellar record. All have issues that can stand improvement. He tells VOA it is the prerogative of a state whether it chooses to address these issues in a genuine manner.
If by chance they don't address their own issues in a genuine manner, there are states who are taking part in this who will certainly shed light on those issues. They wouldn't miss that opportunity through the UPR, but they certainly can't conceal the violations that they're committing, the alleged violations that they are, you know, committing. And with membership, I should point out that they certainly can't escape any form of scrutiny either.
Gomez says many good things have emerged from this process. He notes people have benefited from the implementation by states of recommendations made at the UPR. For example, he says literacy rates have increased in some countries. Minority religions have been approved by constitutional orders in others, and prison conditions have been improved. Gomez says the United States has been actively involved in the UPR process, despite having relinquished its seat as a member of the UN Human Rights Council. He says the U.S. will come under review on November 9th.
I can tell you that from the reports which are already in the public domain on this review, the situations of people of African descent, racism, discrimination, police brutality, these are some of the issues which will be addressed during this review.
Gomez says other issues, such as the situation of migrants in the U.S., also will come up. Because of the coronavirus, he says most of the participants will testify remotely from Washington. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Riot police fired warning shots and arrested more than 200 Belarusians who marched through Minsk on Sunday, demanding that leader Alexander Lukashenko leave power. Reuters' Gloria So reports.
Over 200 protesters were arrested in Belarus on Sunday as tens of thousands defied warning shots and stun grenades fired by riot police and demanded President Alexander Lukashenko step down. Mass demonstrations against Lukashenko have gripped the capital, Minsk, for 12 straight weeks after a highly contested election, which left the veteran leader in power. Lukashenko rejects accusations the vote was rigged and says he has no intention of quitting. And on Friday, he sharpened his rhetoric against protesters.
If someone touches a serviceman, I've already made a remark to the generals. He must leave at least without hands. I say this publicly so that everyone understands our determination. We have nowhere to retreat, and we are not going to retreat. Whether the protesters are ready or not, we shall act.
Last week, Lukashenko partially closed the country's border to the west and replaced his interior minister in an attempt to tighten his grip on power. That came as factory workers and students across Belarus answered an opposition call to launch a nationwide strike against him. More than 16,000 people have been detained in the Belarusian crackdown so far, prompting Western nations to fire off a fresh round of sanctions against the country.
Gloria So reports for Reuters News. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other electronic device to voanews.com. And for updated election information, listen to our top-of-the-hour newscasts. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump said he is committed to deliver justice to all who contribute to the cruelty of human trafficking and will tenaciously pursue the promise of freedom for all victims of this terrible crime. Accordingly, President Trump recently released his administration's National Action Plan to Combat Human Trafficking, a plan aimed at ending the exploitation of both adults and children, whether for forced labor or sex trafficking, within the United States. It is built around the three pillars of prevention, protection, and prosecution. Through a whole-of-government approach, the United States will use every tool at its disposal to combat human trafficking. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and other federal agents have arrested more than 5,000 human traffickers over the last 3 years. We are dismantling criminal organizations as we disrupt the financial infrastructure of these networks, said President Trump in the introduction to the National Action Plan. U.S. law enforcement collaborates with Mexican law enforcement officials to annihilate human trafficking networks operating across the southern border. The U.S. is also calling on all nations, businesses, and consumers to demand global supply chains that are free from forced labor. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the State Department will continue to strongly condemn the Chinese Communist Party's egregious practice of forced labor, among other human rights abuses, as part of its campaign of repression against Uyghurs and members of other ethnic and religious minority groups in the Xinjiang, and throughout China. As a consequence, the United States has leveled visa restrictions on People's Republic of China and Chinese Communist Party officials, believed to be responsible for horrific rights abuses, built international coalitions at the United Nations, and issued the Xinjiang Supply Chain Business Advisory. As long as the CCP continues to perpetrate such abuses, said Secretary Pompeo, we will continue to work with industry, labor advocates, and other governments to call attention to the issue and pressure the government to immediately halt its unacceptable policy of forced labor. The United States is resolute in its commitment to ending all forms of human trafficking at home and abroad. This horrific crime cannot continue to threaten the safety of communities and individuals, said Secretary Pompeo. We will push forward in defeating it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.